from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. The BART strike is over. Last night, announcements were made that a tentative agreement was reached and the trains are running again. Meanwhile, the National Transportation Safety Board has begun an investigation into the deaths of two BART workers who were struck on Saturday by a train while inspecting tracks. We'll discuss that incident and what role it may have played in the agreement that was worked out last night, and we'll find out what is in the agreement and look at the economic impact of the shutdown on the Bay Area. And we want to hear from you, our listeners. How did this strike affect you, and what needs to be done to avoid another one? Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. After all the inconvenience and aggravation of BART trains being immobile and the severe gridlock of freeway congestion, the BART strike ended last night with the announcement of a tentative agreement by the unions and BART management, subject to agreement by union members and BART's board of directors. BART workers had walked off again on Friday after negotiations had broken down over work rules, and the trains are now running on schedule. All lines, full service is expected soon, though earlier this morning there were reports of snafus. On Saturday, two BART workers were tragically killed near the Walnut Creek BART station. And this morning's opening forum hour, we discuss all these events and look forward to what lies ahead. And joining us first is Mike Rosenberg, who is a staff writer who covers transportation issues with the San Jose Mercury News, joins us from the South Bay. Mike, good to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I guess the place to begin here with you is, how they came to this agreement in terms of what we know and what we know about what was agreed upon. Work rules were supposedly the obstacle, but and I know there are a lot of details that have not been revealed until this is sanctioned by the union workers and BART management. But what do we really know about the agreement?
Well, I think it's pretty safe to say it's either a 3 or 4 year agreement, very likely to be a 4 year agreement. Workers got at least a 12% pay increase over that period. They're going to be contributing about 4% toward their pensions. That's up from nothing currently. Their medical payments will be going up for about $92 to $140 a month. And then there are various work rules, as you mentioned, that'll be changing. Some of them will be staying the same, and as you said, it will be sort of unclear until the union members approve the contract what exactly those different work rules will be. But it's pretty safe to say that there'll be some things in there that will allow technology to replace some of the older jobs that the workers had been doing that BART sees as sort of inefficient.
There's also been at least some statements about more discussion on the way about safety.
That's right. I mean, especially after Saturday's tragic accident that killed two workers, safety has always been a big issue for the workers. They feel like it's not as safe a job as it could be, that there's a lot of dangerous aspects to the job, and we'll have to see exactly what's in the agreement that spells out for workers what will make the job safer for them. But obviously, Saturday's accident really spurred both sides back to the table and helped them realize it was time to reach an agreement. And some of the things in there that will get trains running again will also keep the job a little bit safer for the workers, it seems like.
Do you think those two tragic deaths got things moving in terms of the agreement that was worked out last night?
Well, it's hard to see why not. I mean, the agreement that was hashed out probably would have happened one way or another eventually, but as far as spurring the agreement the way it did, I mean, if you look at the way talks happened again on Sunday for the first time after they went on strike on Thursday, that came about 24 hours or so after the accident happened. I mean, it could have been just mere coincidence, but certainly the tone of the talks changed completely after the accident. There wasn't any sort of bickering back and forth. There really wasn't even any of those cheap shots last night when the announcement was made. It sort of just turned from animosity between the two sides toward just, okay, let's just be somber and get this deal done.
I was reading Bob Gammon in the East Bay Express, who said that the death of those two transit workers was strong evidence of what union officials have been saying all along about the danger to BART workers and the necessity of high-skilled drivers. The driver who actually was operating that train was kind of in training, we know now, don't we?
That's correct. It's kind of a tough thing to hear that it was an inexperienced employee who was training to be an operator. He was operating the train on what you consider to be autopilot, sort of like cruise control when you're operating a car. But of course, you can step in at any moment to take control of the train, and that's what he did, was sounding the horn and hitting the emergency brake before the train rather struck the two employees that were on the tracks in Walnut Creek. And there was an operator on board who was experienced, who was training the manager who was actually behind the controls, but it was pretty clear that there was some sort of communication breakdown. For one reason or another, the people in the train didn't know that the people on the tracks were actually working, because they were coming along as if they were, if the tracks were completely clear.
It's also almost impossible to hear that train coming. In fact, one of the engineers who was out on the tracks has done a lot to make the noise almost non-existent. We're talking, by the way, with Ken Rosenberg, staff writer who covers transportation issues for the San Jose Mercury News. And as far as that tragedy, investigator Jim Southworth of the National Transportation Safety Board said yesterday that the agency will spend at least a week collecting evidence. Here's his cut.
We are at the very start of this investigation. These accidents occur in an instant, but they take a great deal of time to investigate.
That's a statement again from Jim Southworth, head of the National Transportation Safety Board, and the final accident report could actually take at least 6 months to complete. When we hear an investigator speak like that, it suggests that at this point, we really are not going to be told a great deal until this investigation is over, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right with that. And if you remember into the San Bruno pipeline accident or the Asiana plane crash earlier this year, the two sort of high-profile crashes that the National Transportation Safety Board investigated, I mean, they really do take their time, a year, year and a half, before they release any of their reports. That's sort of their MO. And there'll be little pieces of information that drip out here and there, especially over the first week while the NTSB is on site. But as far as getting the full picture of what really happened, it might not be until next year, possibly even 18 months from now.
Well, let me invite those of you listening to join this program now, because I'm interested in hearing particularly from some of you who have some strong responses to the strike, one way or the other. I mean, how did it affect you, and in what way did it affect you? We want to find out actually now not only about aggravation and inconvenience, which I mentioned earlier, but the original idea of the strike was essentially, well, to show to what extent this both sides wanted to show their side. And I guess it boils down to not only what side do you feel deserves the most sympathy or the most enmity in this and the most outrage on your part, but what do you think about it, and how is it, how did it affect your work? How did it affect you economically? We'll get to the Bay Area Council, and we'll take some responses from them in terms of actually the total economic impact on the Bay Area, which was considerable. I mean, extraordinary, about $73 million a day just in worker productivity loss. But we would like to hear from you, and you can join us now at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. And the essential question is how the strike affected you, either economically or just in terms of your feelings about either the workers and the union or BART management. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or you can go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And, of course, we welcome your tweets. You can go to our Twitter handle, which is @KQED Forum. But again, feel free to join us here, and let's hear from you. Let's hear how this strike affected you. And, you know, there's some speculation now, Ken Rosenberg, about, was the strike the fault more of management, or was it the fault more of the union? And I'm not going to get you on record in terms of your own feelings here, because we'll hear from a lot of listeners on that. But what's been interesting has been other newspapers, not the Mercury News, but the Chronicle and the Oakland Tribune have taken very strong editorials condemning both, but particularly condemning the unions.
Right. I mean, there have been obviously a lot of people taking sides on this, and it's a very, for whatever reason, it's an issue that people are really digging their heels in and defending one side or the other on. I think you have a lot of people on one side who say, well, they're already paid $76,000 or so a year in gross pay on average. That's the highest among California transit agencies, and that seems high to a lot of people, and the benefits are really nice. And then you have people on the other side who think these union workers are really standing on behalf of all the blue-collar union workers around the state who have really been suffering over the years and lost their jobs to technology or seen their benefits and their pay cut back. And it's a really controversial issue from that standpoint. And the polls that have been done over the last several months, really ever since this began in June, have shown pretty repeatedly that most people don't necessarily take one side as being the winner in this, but if you're looking for which side is sort of the lesser of two evils, management seems to have a 2-to-1 advantage in the polls in terms of being able to get their message across better.
Yeah, it's a strange analogy because the Bay Area is progressive politically and certainly often favors unions. And in fact, in California, the union numbers are up and there's more favorable attitudes, according to polls, toward unions. But in this strike, it's a very different feeling along those lines. And the union has taken a big hit on this. It's almost like they're being compared to the Republican Party in terms of the standstill of the U.S. government. We've also got to take into effect here the fact that there's a movement now to essentially block transit strikes and block transit workers from going on strike, and that has to be part of this whole equation. In New York and in Oregon and in Washington and in Chicago, there is prohibition against transit strikes. And what do you read in terms of that, Ken?
Yeah, I mean, that's the long-term impact of all this. I mean, the legislative session is over for the year in Sacramento, but next year when the state legislature comes back, I mean, there's going to be a bill that they'll have to discuss that will ban all bar strikes for forever. And that's something that is going to be a really, really tough sell with all the Democrats controlling both houses of the legislature by a 2-thirds majority.
I think it's safe to say it's going to probably have to be a ballot measure.
Yeah, I think that's likely, and that seems very... That seems like a long shot as well. So I think what it's done is stimulate a discussion on it, but as far as actually seeing a strike ban, that is not something that I think is still particularly likely.
Well, hang on a minute here, Ken. I got a caller who has a question that I hope you can answer. Frank, go ahead.
Good morning. I wanted to go back to the accident issue and ask whether your caller had read this morning's Chronicle, which posted a fairly extensive excerpt from the radio communications from BART headquarters to the effect that attention, there's guys are working on the tracks, and then went on to describe the task as one that should have, in effect, it sounds like it should have had a third person there watching. And I'm wondering whether this bears on the work rule, safety rule stuff that your caller was discussing in the beginning of the segment.
Well, I think you mean my guest here. Mike Rosenberg, can you respond?
Yeah, I think that's been one of the central issues that the workers have been fighting for. I mean, in that particular instance, you had two workers on the job. One was actually doing the work on the tracks when they had a report of a dip in the tracks that they were trying to fix, and the other worker was basically as a lookout person trying to make sure that the trains weren't coming, and it's still unclear why exactly that system failed, but you're right. I mean, that's something that the workers are fighting very hard for, and we'll have to see in the agreement what exactly is spelled out there, but they want to make provisions in the contract to make sure that the jobs are safer, so this sort of thing is not going to happen again.
And Frank, I thank you for that call, and Mike Rosenberg, I thank you for joining us on Forum. Appreciate your being with us this morning.
Thank you.
That's Mike Rosenberg, staff writer covering transportation issues for the San Jose Mercury News. And we're going to continue and take your calls about your responses to the strike now that it is apparently over and what kind of impact it had on you. And let me get Amy on here from Menlo Park. Amy, you're on. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say my boyfriend is a driver for BART, and I have been listening to this, trying to be objective all the way through. but I really feel like the union is being busted up by the management, and that this was a very calculated move by them to hire a very expensive negotiator who then refused to come to the table for months on end.
Well, there was some talk about also BART management not being, or sort of being MIA, at least in the earlier part of the negotiations. I think, you know, certainly both sides get a lot of blame here. But do you think, because this has been advanced as a as an idea by many who are at least on the side of the union, that that BART management wanted the strike to take place?
Absolutely. I have no question about that. And I work in education, and I see, you know, union busting is going on all over the country. Teachers are being blamed for the downfall of the economic structure when, in fact, it's, you know, bankers and lawyers. And then here BART comes along, and these guys are just trying to make a decent wage, and they don't make a lot of money. And they haven't had a raise in years. And then they're offered a raise, but they're told, oh, yeah, we're going to take it all back in terms of your commitments to paying pensions and such.
Well, Amy, I thank you for the call. And again, you can let us know where you weigh in on this. And not only that, but how the strike affected you and in what ways it affected you economically. And we're going to get a perspective. And toll-free number is 866-733-6786, or you can email us forum at kqed.org. I want to bring Tracy Gross into this conversation talking about economic impact. She's vice president of the Bay Area Council, the Economic Institute. And Tracy, good to have you with us. Welcome to the program. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks so much, Michael.
I'd like to get just some numbers from you, if we could. I had said earlier that the Bay Area Council came up with a figure of $73 million a day in worker productivity loss, and that was that figure was established how?
Right. Well, just to step back 1 minute, I would like to say that trying to establish an estimate for something like this is a complex exercise. And, you know, given limited resources, limited time, the best we can do is use the data we have at hand and be transparent about the assumptions that we're applying. So, you know, we know that half of workers in the Bay Area cross at least one county line to get to work. So when BART is not in operation, then we have many more people, at least 200,000 more people, trying to find their way to work on our roads, on buses, in cars, what have you. We also know that the Bay Area ranks fourth in the nation for the worst congestion. So our roads do not have a whole lot of flexibility for accommodating added volumes, large volumes of traffic. So if you think again about half our workers are crossing at least one county line, we know roughly that you know, regional average earnings are about $78,000. A year. So we know that if you can calculate the hour rate is about $37 per hour. Back in July, we were hearing over social media and other media that the people were suffering roughly 2 hours of delay a day. So when you consider you know, 2 hours of lost productivity, you can calculate that. You know, we're also thinking that given the shutdown of BART, some people have the opportunity to work from home. So rough estimation we applied back in July was 25%. So looking at half the workers in the region and looking at 25% of them staying off the roads, the cost of that lost productivity of 2 hours was $73 million.
Yeah, but that might be a minimal figure. From what you're saying.
Oh, it is absolutely a minimal figure. You know, the reason why this stuff is so difficult to estimate is because of the complexity of all the ripple effects. So, you know, when you suddenly do not have people walking to and from BART stations, you have a lot of small businesses that no longer see the foot traffic that keeps them alive. Then certainly you have, businesses, restaurants, you know, their core business is business lunches, maybe in downtown or in other downtown centers. People aren't stopping for lunch when they're spending 2 hours plus just getting to and from work. They're certainly not scheduling as many business dinners afterwards. And then you've got all the folks who are in distribution. Well, they're going to be making far fewer drops per day and at a higher fuel cost per delivery. But, you know, back to that $73 million per day, again, that assumed 25% of folks could work from home. Well, we know a lot of people can't work from home, folks in the service industries and such. In early October, a poll was conducted in anticipation of a second strike, and people were asked, could you work from home? Would you be working from home? And it was only 17% who said they could work from home. So we adjusted our calculation, and that resulted in $81 million per day if only 17% of folks could work from home. And then, you know, July, again, it was a holiday week. The schools were out. Our roads were not as heavily traveled in July as they certainly are in October.
Now, talk about the roads being traveled, by the way. I want to get this on the record with you, too, Tracy. Tracy Gross is with us from the Bay Area Council Economic Institute. You also figured that about 60 million pounds of carbon and a waste of about 800,000 gallons of gas each day and came up with a figure, I mean, notwithstanding all the effect on the environment and on ecology, of about $3.3 million lost there.
I'm sorry, from the environmental impacts?
Yeah, I read your environmental impacts, and we're talking about millions of dollars there as well. But also, you can't measure things like carbon footprint here and waste of gasoline.
Right.
I mean, you came up with figures, but the impact, you know, is dramatic.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with those figures, but I certainly understand, you know, what carbon emissions mean. And, you know, at this point with climate change, the last thing we should be doing is putting more cars on the road. That is for sure.
Again, Tracy Gross is Vice President of the Bay Area Council Economic Institute. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, sure. My pleasure, Michael. Thank you.
And we'll be joined now by more of your calls. Bob is joining us from San Leandro. Bob, hi.
Hello. How are you?
Okay. Thank
Glad
you.
To be on your show.
Glad to have you.
Yeah, I was very inconvenienced by the BART strike. And I was also made aware, I did a little bit of online looking myself, New York City, it's now illegal to strike for public transit agencies in New York because of the Taylor Act. That's exactly what BART and the people of the Bay Area need. They need to be involved in the public dispute because that's what it is. It's a public dispute. BART has presented it as a private dispute between the workers. The workers feel it's between them and BART only, but it's not. It's a public institution. It's a public system. There should be public accountability. There were lots of monies lost, lots of people inconvenienced, and that should not happen. And as far as the two workers being killed, someone needs to be held accountable for that.
All right, Bob, I thank you for that call. And it's not only, by the way, New York City. There is prohibition, as I said, of transit strikes in Oregon and Washington, D.C. and Chicago, and the city charter in San Francisco bans them as well. So that's a big topic now, and it's going to remain on people's minds. We want to find out what's on your mind, though, and how the strike affected you, and we'll continue taking more of your calls. Also talking about the tragic deaths of two BART workers and what lies ahead. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about the BART strike in the aftermath. An agreement was reached last night, and the trains are running. There are some snafus this morning, but they are supposed to be fully running later on this afternoon. And let me bring another caller on. We're asking your responses to the strike and the impact it had on you, and looking back, perhaps what you've learned from it. Let me get Dominic on as our next caller. Dominic, you're on.
One of the things that continues to amaze me about the response to this strike is that it seems that people don't understand the history of union in this country. If management is doing the right thing, there's no place for union, organized union. But that hasn't been the case. In this particular situation, the management of BART abdicated their responsibility. The board has a fiduciary responsibility to the general public, and it's not just financial. Why did they wait till the very end of the contract to start letting the union know that you will not get the same contract that you got before? This is something that should have been negotiated, at least communicated to the union multiple times over the life of the contract itself. When the executive gets their pay raises, the general public doesn't know anything about it. The union only has one recourse, and that is strike.
All right. I thank you for the call. There are some strong sentiments both ways, as we're hearing here and as I've been hearing since the BART negotiations began. Ken Jacobs is chair of the Center for Labor Research and Education at UC Berkeley, and I wanted to have him join us and get his perspective. Ken, good to have you with us. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, and good morning.
Good morning to you. I think it's fair to say that more people see the unions as the hostage takers here, like the GOP is viewed by the public. And the public perception is of this, despite the fact that, as I said earlier, union numbers are up in California and more favorable attitudes toward unions in California. I want to get your perspective on this, and your perspective is the BART management refused arbitration, therefore that tells us a great deal.
Well, it wasn't just refusing arbitration. When the 60-day cooling-off period started, the BART management refused to come back to the table for a long period of time, waited to the very end to put another proposal on the table. Then when it looked like negotiations were really moving, put forward a last, best, and final, and it wasn't until local elected officials weighed in that the BART management agreed to keep talking. This whole process, and then at the very end, coming back and not accepting arbitration, this last strike really didn't need to happen. The union had put forward that they were going to take arbitration on the remaining issues around work rules. To resolve that, the economics were already resolved, and management just kept pushing.
Well, and, you know, the funny thing is, there may be some irony in the fact a lot of people are out of work and their wages are far below those of BART workers. But what we don't hear a lot of is, well, for example, came up on this program, Dorothy Digger, highest paid BART employee, BART management at $333,000, and didn't work a day. That was on top of the $920,000 that BART paid to get her to leave. And she stayed on and got paid in spite of all that. But it's the union that's taken the big hit in terms of being supposedly greedy because they want higher wages.
And you also have the incredible amount of money that was paid to the BART negotiator who kept disappearing during the negotiations and ran off to Disneyland at a key moment. That's right. And this is something that comes up regularly. We often see this in terms of pensions, where there's talk about outlandish pensions, and those are mainly for management. The average worker, actually, pensions are relatively small. So there's really sort of two things that go on here. One is, in the economy in general, we've seen a real decline in middle-class jobs, and a decline in middle-class jobs for people who with only a high school education. Coming out of the recession, the growth has been concentrated at the bottom and then some at the top and very little in the middle. And so you have a lot of workers who sit here and say, hey, these BART workers, other public workers, they have these benefits. I don't anymore. Now, it's an understandable emotion. At the same time, destroying what remains of decent middle-class jobs for people with only a high school education won't help the people at the bottom. It'll just continue that race to the bottom.
Yeah, the whole argument has been that the middle class is involved in this and needs to realize that it's involved in this, and it trickles down in terms of so many other jobs. But what do you say, Kent, to the argument, well, I heard it a lot here on the air, that the kind of waste that has gone on in terms of BART workers would not have been tolerated in the private sector? I'm talking about things like 8 hours pay for a 4.5-hour week or overtime pay for those who are collecting sick leave, those kinds of things, which were certainly trumpeted by management.
But those are all issues that were resolved as of the Thursday before the strike happened. They went in, they made an agreement on the economics. Some of those issues you mentioned were resolved early on. That's not what triggered this strike in the end. In the end, it was about some of the sets of work rules, and again, the union had offered to go to arbitration on this, but the big issue here is centered around work rules that affect both people's safety, their security on the job, and their ability to have a stable life in terms of things like what people's work hours are and the ability to have a regular shift schedule.
Let me read you some emails I'm getting, get some response from you. Here's Boris who writes, according to public salaries database provided by the Mercury News, BART union labor workers already make about 6% more than the next highest paid transit authority, SF Muni. This is despite the fact that SF Muni carries more than twice the commuters that BART carries each day. And the additional 12% salary increase is unfair, and it's clear that striking BART laborers abused their position and took the Bay Area economy hostage.
I think it's important to step back and note that in the last negotiations, these workers gave up a significant amount. The economy was down. BART's finances were down. They made real concessions. As the economy's come back, they were looking to gain back some of what they lost. But the management proposal was both the wage increases were below the cost of inflation over the life of the contract. So it was actually, it would have been a reduction in real wages. And then you add on top of that the additional costs out of pocket for workers on pensions and health care, and they would have seen themselves going back even farther. It's easy to understand why that was a significant issue for workers. And again, I think the important thing is, rather than trying to level down and bring people down, we should be concentrating on how do we create middle-class jobs and how do we level up. And I think we have to give the unions a lot of credit for that. SEIU, who was involved in this strike, the others have really been out there fighting for issues like raising California's living wage and successfully doing so, like the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights, Family Medical Leave Act. And so they have been doing quite a bit of work, not just for their own members, but recognizing that you've got to raise it up for everybody.
Ken Jacobs, again, is chair of the Center for Labor Research and Education at UC Berkeley. Here's a web comment from the other side. Listener T.H. Lucy writes, as a working-class non-union member, BART commuter, I fully support the BART workers. The animus shown to them in the Bay Area is an indication of how corporate attitudes have overtaken the Bay Area. As a native San Franciscan, I'm looking at the New York mayoral election, and I'm really stunned by how different the politics are in New York. De Blasio, who appears poised to win in New York, would never win a primary in San Francisco Bay Area because there's hardly any working class left in San Francisco. Here, on the other hand, is Dave from Alameda, who writes, I support workers' rights to strike if they are unhappy with pay and conditions. I also equally support employers' rights to immediately fire workers who walk off the job. Right now, the former is enshrined in law, but we won't have justice until the latter is also. And that will not happen until the Democratic Party stops being the union's patron and instead focuses on the needs of the majority of its members who are productive taxpayers in the private sector. Ken Jacobs?
Well, so taking the latter first, unions play an important role in upholding and building the middle class in California and in the United States. And we have seen a divorce over the last 30 years between workers' productivity and compensation. And it directly, you can track it directly with the decline in union density, the share of workers that are in unions in the United States. And unions are play the only sort of role of bulwark against the power of large corporations in terms of defining the political agenda. In a world in which we have increasing inequality, unions play a vital role. But getting back to the first point, I was also I don't know that I would go as far as the commenter, but I was struck at some of the open disdain of working people that was expressed in some of the comments that you heard. I mean, a Twitter executive, others, and very little recognition that these are jobs are difficult, grueling, and often dangerous work. And I'm thankful that we have people who do these jobs. And I think most people in the Bay Area are.
Ken Jacobs, again, chair of the Center for Labor Research and Education at the University of California, Berkeley. Ken, thanks for joining us on Forum.
Thank you.
Let me, before I go to more of your calls and find out how the strike had an impact on you, I want to read some more emails, both pro and con union, as you might imagine. Timothy says, I hear a lot of people complain that public and union workers make too much or have too nice of a retirement package. I just want to know, when did America become a race to the bottom? Instead of complaining that a middle-class family can buy a house and save for retirement, why don't the rest of us ask, why can't we? And here's Nate, who writes, the tragedy of worker deaths in no way supports the union position that there needs to be more safety. We know one thing for certain. Managers would not have been getting trained to drive trains if the train drivers had not been on strike. The two deaths supports the ballot measure to do away with BART strikes, and I will support any such measure. On the other hand, here's Bruce from Oakland, who asks, what do you make of Gavin Newsom saying this will never happen again at the news conference? I support the union. It's easy to bash them, especially if you don't know all the factors involved. Unions have been on the decline for decades, and it's harder than ever to get by in the Bay Area. On the other hand, here's Patricia, who writes, I'm a union supporter. However, when it comes to public transportation, the union misstepped, thinking that the public would support them. Look, they have a great package, so no pity. Shame on them for striking. They were not or are not victims and held the public hostage. You can see how strong the emotions are on this. So let me get John on here. John, you're on.
Thank you, Michael. I joined the Teamsters Union in 1960 when I was 22 years old. I was able to raise a family of three kids, buy a home, send my kids to college, a middle-class job. There was 13,000 members in Teamsters Union when I joined in San Francisco. Today, there's 900 members of that same union. That's what happened to the team to all unions in San Francisco. 43% of the working people in San Francisco were unionized in 1960, and Ronald Reagan was elected, and the deluge started from the right wing of the Republican Party. And now we have, what, 8% union in the United States.
Well, it also started, excuse me, John, under Reagan with the air traffic controller strike.
It started with that, and it went on, and they spent tons of money to break unions, and they were very successful. Now unions are trying to make a comeback. The public doesn't like it. I've been listening to this argument for 50 years. Why doesn't the public organize? Why don't they get jobs and raise their standard of living like we did with ours?
John, I thank you for that call. Good to hear from you, and we'll hear next from Lisa in Richmond. Lisa, join us. You're on.
Yes, I am calling to make a comment about how BART management really seems to represent the needs of suburban commuters. And the union representatives were really, I think, looking out more for the workers who tend to live in the urban core. And I do think that while San Francisco or the Bay Area might have progressive politics, those out in Concord and Walnut Creek are not necessarily very supportive of unionization. And there does seem to be a way that the needs of East Bay and commuters sort of overweighs the needs of workers in Oakland and Berkeley.
All right. I thank you, Lisa, for that call, and we'll go to more of your calls in just a moment. I want to bring Stephen Glazer on, though. He's an Orinda City Council member and organizer of the BanBartStrikes.com, the online petition campaign. Stephen Glazer, welcome to Forum. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Glad to have you. So why do we need this ban?
Well, I think that it's pretty clear for most people that BART's an essential service here in the Bay Area. If you were on the road yesterday during the strike and even for part of this morning, I mean, our whole Bay Area transit system shuts down when they're not running. And the impact is so great that I think they should be viewed as the same way we view police and fire. It's an essential service, essential public service, and the ability to strike should be limited.
Well, there's a bill in the legislature, I think a Republican legislator put in, that essentially follows through on this, but there's little doubt that this probably would not get through a Democratic majority legislature. So do you want to get this on the ballot?
Well, I think that in many places in the country where there are bans on strikes, even liberal areas such as Chicago, New York, Washington, D.C., even San Francisco, I think the power of labor is such that most of the time these things can't go anywhere, but out of crisis come opportunities for the public to reexamine whether this is an appropriate situation or not. And I think we're having that reexamination right now based on the strike that we've just experienced. It's the fifth one since BART was established, started running in the early 1970s. And so I'm hopeful that with public support and growing public support and public anger, that we can convince our legislators to rethink this issue. It is embarrassing that that no one during the strike, both in July and then the last few days, that not a single one of our elected state representatives stood up to defend the situation for riders in our economy.
Well, what do you make about Gavin Newsom saying we can't let this happen again? I mean, he was very adamant about that.
Well, I was encouraged by what he said, but I wasn't clear whether he was speaking to the relationship between labor and management going forward or a law that would limit this from ever happening again. If it was the latter, then I'm pleased. And the former is something we all want, but doesn't necessarily mean a change in how we conduct ourselves and whether or not we're going to just kick ourselves in the head 4 years from now when that contract comes up. And of course, we have AC Transit waiting in the wings now. They've said they're going to strike, and that certainly has huge impacts to our area as well.
Talking to Steve Glazer, who's the organizer of the BanBartStrike.com online petition campaign and also a city council member in Orinda in the East Bay. And how many signatures do you figure you have at this point, Stephen? How many do you need?
We haven't announced the number. I can tell you that we've gotten over 10,000 signatures since the strike was called last Friday. So the numbers are growing every day. People are fed up with what they just experienced. We encourage them to go to BanBartStrikes.com and sign up so we can build that constituency that can advocate for a law change so we never experience this again.
If they were on strike today, it would probably go through the roof even more. But what about the fact that it's been settled?
Well, as I mentioned, the AC Transit strike threat that still is out there, I think people are fed up. And I think it's going to take a time to build a constituency. It was mentioned earlier on the show that, you know, what we need is a state ballot measure. Well, these things require a lot of money and a lot of people, and so it does take the time. As you know, it's not easy for a Democrat to step up and say, I'm not anti-union, but I'm pro-rider, I'm pro-economy. There's a lot of criticism when that happens, certainly in the Bay Area. That's been made clear to me in my campaign for the assembly, that I'll never receive any union support because of that. So there's a price to be paid, but if you think you're doing the right thing, and I think I am, and I think many people in the Bay Area agree, then we need to activate ourselves and step up and become our own powerful force.
Well, let me get a caller on here who disagrees with you. Jim from San Jose, go ahead.
Good morning. I'm 64, retired. I've worked union and non-union jobs, and I firmly believe that employers cause the need for unions. Unions, I mean, the tragedy of the other day with the two people dying is ironic because it sort of bookends the history of unions. The union people died for the ability to form a union. And everybody who says that they don't want unions and they want to take ability the strike away, they're turning everybody into serfs. If you want to take the ability to strike away, you have to do like certain, well, City of San Jose, for instance, their police and fire cannot strike. But they're not hamstrung. There's binding arbitration clause that the voters voted on over 30 years ago. So if the two entities cannot agree, a third party, professional third party, comes in, you make your case, you make your argument, and the best argument wins. And it goes either way. But to just unilaterally say, well, you can have that job, but you don't have any rights, is just wrong. As the previous caller said, race to the bottom. I have to flash back to the last presidential election. Romney was speaking in Michigan and talking about being home and lamenting about missing the good old days. And ironically, the good old days in Michigan were when unions were their strongest. And everybody who says, why do those unions get stuff? Why don't they say, why don't I start a union?
Jim, let me thank you for the call and get a reaction from Stephen Glazer.
Well, first, I don't have any problem with the unions and that strong union organizing and advocacy. That's a red herring. No one's saying there's a problem with the unions. I think the problem is the union's decision to strike and creating a consequence for all of us in the Bay Area because of the inability to agree with management. Now, the caller mentioned that police and fire can't strike in California, and that's true. And I think another important fact there is that police and fire have the highest wage and benefit packages of any public employee in California. So their inability to strike hasn't created some race to the bottom in terms of their salaries. He mentions the issue of arbitration, and arbitration can be part of a state transit ban. And there's lots of variations of that arbitration, and that there's details to it in terms of making sure it's fair and reasonable to all parties. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't ban a strike when the consequences are so great to so many people and to our regional economy.
I'm looking at an email here, Steve, from a listener who writes, I have now heard many comments from union proponents that a law banning transit strikes would never happen in California, quote, because the Democrats would block it. I think these opinions are expressing a serious naivete about the true sentiments of all Bay Area residents, both right and left-leaning. I am such a left-leaning person, and I have also commuted on BART for over 25 years, and I can't think of a single friend or coworker who supports a transit strike as a contract negotiation tactic. The cost to the public welfare is simply too high. There is no honoring labor that seeks to extort from the community it is employed to serve. And by the way, I'm also looking at an email from a listener named Stephen who says, who brings up the fact that there was a no-strike provision in the last BART contract that was not being enforced. A lot of that had to do with the timing, but I wanted to get that on the record, too. Another listener, let me get a response from you, Steve Glazer, says, by blaming BART workers, you may be encouraging another strike at their next negotiating. If management was sufficiently punished for their actions, they might be more disinclined to refuse to negotiate in the future. Contrary to this, workers usually have no other recourse other than striking, in part due to the decline in labor law supporting binding arbitration. And that gets to the heart of that last call, too. And you, I wonder what you say, Stephen Glazer, to those who say, you know, strike is the ultimate tool that the worker has.
Well, I think that, but there was a reason Franklin Delano Roosevelt said in a letter to trade unions in the 30s that public employees have a public trust and they should never be allowed to strike. Was he a bad Democrat, a bad union person? I don't think so. There's a consequence to a strike that is so great, and the public can be the judge of it, whether it's reasonable or not reasonable. I mean, an earlier person who commented said there's no accountability to management. Well, hold on a second. They're called elections, and every one of those BART board members is going to be up for election. If you think they did a good job, you should reelect them. If you don't, you should replace them. So there's certainly accountability on the management side. Plus, the fact that this board now has to conduct themselves in a fiscally responsible way in terms of making sure the system can work and run operationally and in terms of capital costs. And if that's going to have an impact on fares, well, we're all going to feel that and maybe have something to say about it. So there is a lot of accountability on the management side to this. And again, there's this demonizing that happens when you don't agree with folks. Somehow you're anti-union. And I think that's really a red herring here again. It's not about being about pro-worker or anti-worker. It's about being pro-rider and pro-economy. And we have to find a way to balance that. And I think that balance can happen within a ban on transit strikes like in Chicago, New York, Washington, D.C., Missouri, Oregon, and so many other places.
Let me get another question for you, if I may, Stephen Glazer. It's coming from Doug in San Leandro. Doug, go ahead.
I noticed that Mr. Glazer very cleverly alluded something in a comment that he made a moment ago. He said that binding arbitration as an alternative resolution to labor disputes could be a portion of what might be part of an no-strike law that could be created in California. I'd like to know the signatures that he's collecting right now. Does those signatures specifically say that binding arbitration would be a part of it? Because if it's not, then you are anti-union and you're working to leave workers at the mercy of hostile employers.
Well, the petition speaks to why the impact of a transit strike and why it's something that shouldn't be allowed. It doesn't go into any great detail on lots of different levels. It's a broad statement of position. Undoubtedly, if legislation was advanced to do such a thing, that there would be a substantial conversation, public conversation, about how that is put together, including what type of arbitration, if any, is a part of that. So I'm not trying to represent that the folks that are part of our coalition have agreed to a specific resolution in all its details. It's a broad statement of opposition to strikes and the impacts they have. And I think that is something that has broad reach and embrace by the residents of the Bay Area, and I think that speaks to why there's so many people have gone to banbartstrikes.com and signed up.
Well, again, Stephen Glazer is organizer of banbartstrikes.com, and the online petition campaign continues, and he's also city council member in Orinda. Thank you for joining us, Stephen Glazer.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And let me read some more listener comments. Here's a listener says, Ken Jacobs is just factually incorrect when he implies that BART unions and other public employee unions are somehow preventing a race to the bottom by bargaining for higher wages and benefits in spite of relatively generous compensation packages paid to these unions. Overall middle class wages in the Bay Area have stagnated just like everywhere else in the United States, and the unions may be helping their members, but they are not helping the rest of us. Denise from San Francisco writes, the animosity to the workers in the strike affects all workers. Just about every time workers go on strike, we get divide and conquer language. One newspaper headline, BART workers' goals shaped by game system. The language tries to pit workers against workers for benefiting for being organized into unions. And where is the criticism of the outlandish compensation of corporate executives, many of whom drove their companies into the ground? Unions raise standards for all workers. The other choice is Walmart standards, which is costing the taxpayers $32 million every year in government services to Walmart associates. Robert from Oakland says, why are so many hostile to the notion of workers attaining a decent deal, able to live a middle-class life in an expensive Bay Area? Is it doing the work of the rich and powerful for them to say, I lost my benefits and endured pay cuts, and they should too? This is reverse worker solidarity and a guaranteed recipe for ever-worsening wages and benefits. Let's get you on, Hugh, while we have a moment. Hi.
Hi. I'd like to point out that a lot of the part of the reason for the disconnect is a lot of the riders who are riding BART are earning a lot less than BART workers. And it's not jealousy. It's not nothing to do with history. They just are, and they're being held hostage. They're not able to get to work and earn their money. That's the bottom line. And then as far as private sector unions, unfunded liabilities means that the for pensions means that more money needs to be invested with high stakes capital with people like Mitt Romney, which goes directly towards outsourcing and killing private unions.
All right, Hugh, I thank you for that call, and I wish we had time for more of your calls, but we have really come up against the clock here, and I want to thank all of you who did call in or write in expressing not only the impact this had on you, but your opinions. We certainly got into some very strong opinions about culpability with respect to the union or BART management, and we will continue to obviously follow the aftermath of the strike and the investigation into the tragedy of the two BART workers. We thank you for being with us here on Forum. We're here with you every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated in the evening. Thanks to Mike Rosenberg of San Jose Mercury News and Terry Gross from the Bay Area Council Economic Institute, Ken Jacobs for the Center for Labor Research and Education at UC Berkeley, and Stephen Glazer, the organizer of the BanBartStrikes.com online petition. That's Tracy Gross, by the way. And thank you again, our listeners. You can continue this discussion online. Go to kqed.org/forum and click on the segment. Another hour ahead with a leading playwright and a leading author. When we return, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.